This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, strap in, Bills fans. It's Bills Chiefs week. Seemingly an annual occurrence now. They may as well be a division opponent.
We've played a more than division opponent since the
beginning
of last year.
For the fifth time since the beginning of the 2020 season, counting playoffs, of course. And here we are again, and we will be here again next year when the Bills play against the AFC West, of which the Chiefs are a member. We will dive headlong into all of this in short order, but small, tiny, little critter story, okay? Steve and I are walking through the field house to go up for a cup of coffee in the cafeteria this morning, and it is an unmistakable sound that you know instantly. It's a cricket.
Right.
Like going bananas.
In full.
Like this
song.
Isn't even cricket season.
This cricket's filling up the room. I mean, you can hear it.
From like 25, 30 feet away.
And
clear as a bell.
Yeah.
So we tracked him down. He was in the men's room in the field house.
Right.
Hanging out by the drain on the floor. And you want to talk? Like, usually when you get close to a cricket, they're quiet. They stop chirping. And then, you know, once they think it's safe again, they fire it up. This guy did not stop. Unaffected by the presence of humans.
I've really never witnessed one live when you look at it and have his wings up
and he's strumming together.
Yeah, he's strumming and it was loud.
Yeah.
It was loud.
He had good acoustics there in the men's room.
Yeah, nice echo. No wonder we could hear it.
But he was killing it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to find a friend or a significant other because we're past the season. He just survived, I'm guessing, in the drainage pipe. And, you know, here he is, you know, in a climate-controlled Bills field house. I will say this, though. It's a good sign because my Italian grandmother would tell you that if you find crickets in your home, it's considered good luck. So long as you don't kill them, release them.
Oh, you're not supposed to?
No.
No.
So my Italian grandmother would be the first to tell you find crickets in your home, it's good luck. My wife and I actually had them in the basement of our first home. Like, I don't know how they were getting in through the foundation, but they were finding their way in. And I'd be getting up in the morning and be like, what the? Are they? I go in the basement. There's like three or four of them down there.
Yeah.
And so now I'm just like, oh my God, I'm thinking of my grandma. I can't kill these. I gotta catch them, you know, scoop them up and get them out of the house. But this is a good sign for the Bills. There's a cricket in the house.
I knew there was a point to this.
There's a cricket in the field house.
All right, it's good luck.
Hey, listen, under the guidelines of Italian heritage, it is good luck.
The Chiefs have a above 500 win percentage. I think they're 12-9 or something when they are at home, I think, when they're at home with Pat Mahomes at quarterback, they're 10 or more points behind at some point in the game. They have a above 500 record in those games where they spot a team 10 or more points.
We saw it last night.
We saw it last night again.
Saw it in that AFC Championship game against the Tennessee Titans. You
and
remember
they
that
were
one?
And yes, when the Titans were rolling.
They were
on
up like 24-10 or something.
It was a little early in the game, though.
Yeah. But
and I think it was by halftime, wasn't it? They were up 24 to like nothing.
They shrunk it in 5 minutes of game clock. 21-3,
and all of a sudden, beep, diddy, bop, diddy, boop. Yeah,
plinkety, plink, plink,
boom,
boom down
the
field.
It's 24-21 Chiefs before halftime. I couldn't believe that.
Saw it
again
last
night. That's when the Chiefs were like nothing we'd ever seen before.
It's become old hat, which is insane to say, because we talk all the time about how the margins are very narrow in this league. And sometimes, even if you're a really good team like the Bills, if you're just a little off, you can get yourself beat. And yet, here are the Chiefs who sleepwalk for a half. And like, all right. Well,
you know what, though?
What is it? Oh, it's the third quarter. We're going to kick this into gear here.
It was
here.
20-10, just like the Bills-Ravens game at halftime.
Oh, I knew where that thing was going.
I know, right? I mean, you could feel it.
Oh, my gosh.
And even in the end, in the third quarter, I think late in the third quarter, it was late in the game when, now famously, Derek Carr's back to pass, gets sack, strip, fumble fallen on. And instead of the ball going to the Chiefs going the other way, first down, it was, oh, no, it's roughing the passer. We're going to give the Raiders more yards and a first down. And the Chiefs overcame that. It was amazing. That, yeah, listen,
yeah,
you've got to
should have had the ball.
You have got to be humming on all cylinders when you get into Arrowhead Stadium.
Yes, because we have not been able to find a defense that has been able to completely shut the Chiefs down.
Well,
now I think we can. Now I'll take a look and double check, but I think we can safely say, to this point in the season, maybe not. I was going to say, this is the Bills is the best defense they will face so far this year. Tampa's got a pretty good defense. They hung 41 on them.
Yeah. Well,
so
we'll see. I mean, we've got some work to do. I mean, this is a club where this game was a good game, no question. 30-29 was the final. Chiefs walk out with a win. And kind of a so there moment for them. Like, yeah, how about this then? If you're going to do that, because they were on the wrong end of a couple of calls. Derek Carr threw it really well. Devontae Adams had a couple of catches. Travis Kelce, 25 yards receiving. Sounds like a great night, except, oh, yeah, four touchdowns. 25 yards, four touchdowns.
Let's talk about that for a second, Steve, because I don't know about you, but on three of the four touchdowns that Kelce scored, the Raiders aren't anywhere near him.
I know.
It's like, are you serious?
It's like this rookie.
How is this guy this open?
Yeah. It's like some rookie undrafted player nobody's ever heard of is, you know, out there, and they say, you know what, if this guy can beat us, so be it. And the guy goes out and catches four touchdowns. That's Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And they were like on the game winner. Yeah. On the game winner, he's like back there, and it's like there's one Raider, two Chiefs, and it couldn't have been an easier catch. What are you doing?
I don't know how you don't have that guy surrounded. You got him front. Like, think about basketball defense. You front him, and you have somebody behind him too.
Yeah, for the lob pass.
I just I don't know. It's inexplicable to me.
Devontae Adams had a nice night, over 100 yards and all that. They had a 100-yard rusher, a 100-yard receiver.
Didn't turn it over.
They didn't turn it over once.
And they still lost.
And they lost. That's such a Raidery thing.
That's Raiders football.
Yeah. So there you go. And on the last play of the game, Devontae Adams and Renfro run into each other to seal the loss.
That was
That is so bad. Well, Josh McDaniels at his finest. There's no love lost for Josh McDaniels in Western New York and with Bills fans.
Yeah.
Former offensive coordinator of the Patriots. Just a weird game. And so the whole football world is up in arms. On one hand, I love it. On the other hand, I'm like, just shut up. They're like, how, you know, the NFL.
You're talking about the roughing the passer
stuff?
Yeah,
roughing the pad. Tom Brady thing. We talked about that yesterday. The Tom Brady roughing the passer call against Atlanta for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last night's roughing the passer call on Pat Mahomes against the Raiders. All this, oh, my
Chris
gosh.
Jones.
It's so horrible. Oh, my God. The league really can't afford to get the, oh, wow, this is really. I'm like, bro, the league's going to be fine. They overcame a missed. This just in, they overcame a missed pass interference in a championship game for the team to go to the Super Bowl. They didn't even hiccup over that. You think this last weekend is really going to get them? The officials, they've obviously been given some instructions and some points of emphasis to say, listen, make sure the quarterbacks don't get slung to the ground. Make sure anybody who gets up staggering, you know, protect these guys. So they come out and a couple of officials have a couple of overreaction calls. Like this one with Derek Carr and the one on Sunday with Tom Brady. You know, Carl Jeffers and Jerome Boger, the two officials in question. Very experienced, very respected officials. Okay, give these guys a chance to adjust. There's a couple of bad calls, and it cost Atlanta a game. But you know what? It was a Week 5 game in the regular season.
Right.
Championship game. It wasn't the Super Bowl. It wasn't a playoff game. Come on.
And here's the distinction, too, and far be it from me to be defending officials, but I'm going to do it here. Typically, when there are changes, that the competition committee or the league as a whole wants to institute. They do it in the offseason. They train the officials. They run them through it through the course of
preseason,
attending training camp practices. You know, crews are dispatched to training camps, and they practice making those calls in a live practice setting.
They talk to coaches.
And then they do it in preseason games for 3 weeks. And then those points of emphasis are properly enforced when you get to the regular season. Well, now we got a week 4 memo coming out, and like they're telling the officials, hey, we got to call this a little bit tighter here, guys. So they're doing it in real time in the regular season with no prep and with no trial by fire, you know, trial and error kind of approach like they have in the preseason.
And
it's like, go and do it and be perfect.
And it's at regular season speed too, man. I'll
that
say this,
too.
The thing last night with Chris Jones and Derek Carr, Jones hits him from behind. They fall down together. You didn't know the ball was loose until Jones got up with it. So the thing about him having the ball when they fall down, and all, nobody knows that until he gets up with it. They're not going to know that. And him bouncing off Derek Carr is quintessential quarterback roughing. So the fumble and all that is irrelevant. So, yeah. So Carl Jeffers, while everybody wishes it should have been a turnover and all that, it should have been a turnover for the Chiefs, you know, cut the guy some slack. That was a tough call to make. You can't see the ball.
Yeah, he's standing behind the quarterback. He's in the background of the frame. He doesn't see the ball come out.
You can't
see
the ball's out, but he does see him land with full force on Derek Carr. That's quintessential quarterback roughing. So from his view, I mean, yeah, okay, he got it right. Now, the one in Jerome Boger on Sunday against Tom Brady, that was a soft call. That should not have been made.
But what call did it look – what play did it look like the most?
Oh, Tua Tagovailoa.
It looked like Tua getting whipped to the ground against Cincinnati on the previous Thursday.
And you can bet.
So as soon as it looks the same and he saw that guy suffer a concussion, he's thinking, oh, geez, I better call this roughing the passer here.
Yeah.
Because it looks just like what Tua got a concussion on. And it's Tom Brady.
Right. All of that. We hate to say that, but it might or might not
be
true.
There are some Brady rules.
But that's the thing. So it's crazy to think these guys are going to get it right like that every time. Now, that sling to the ground, even the Tua Tagovailoa one where he was out.
That was
in the
not
Cincinnati
penalized.
Game, that wasn't – Milano's was penalized because Milano, remember, gave him the push in the chest and pushed
after
him
the
over.
Ball was away. It was
right,
late.
But the one on Thursday night, that was nothing.
No.
But you can obviously say – you can kind of connect the dots. The league said, watch out for the way they did Tua on this sling to the ground.
Yep.
Hitting his head sideways. Watch out for that. Well, you see it happens. Like, okay, I better throw the flag. Well, not exactly.
Right.
You know? So this is, and I'll say this too. This is actually, to me, certainly those are two calls that are not right. They should not have been made in the way they were made. Even the Carl Jeffers one in Kansas City with the ball being loose, there should be some mechanism in the sky judge. And when he gets a look at it, say, nope, it's going to be a fumble recovery by the Chiefs, all of that stuff. But I'll say this. Unlike most other issues that the league faces, I kind of like the fact that they're making a quick and concerted and obvious effort to get it right. The Tua thing set them off, set the fans off, set all of us off. It's like, you know, the guy shouldn't have been allowed to play. For us, we mean, you know, the guy shouldn't have been allowed to play because he's a good player. We don't want him in. We'd rather have the backup.
Mm-hmm.
For the Dolphin fans, you want the guy back next week if you can get him, or at least in 2 weeks without a concussion. You know, so that's what the league's reacting to. So this is tangible evidence. Listen, the league's, I've said it a million times, the league gets most of these issues right. The most of us have a problem with them taking too long. And in this case, it's just the opposite of that. They went a little too fast, and the officials weren't ready to make that
right.
adjustment smooth. So this isn't really a negative situation for me. I mean, I get it that the Atlanta fans are jumping up and down. You got every right to be mad. It cost you a game. It cost you a chance to be number one in the division and all that. But we've always said, if you're bummed about losing a game because of an official's call late, well, welcome to the club.
Mm-hmm.
You can join the rest of the 31 other teams who have also had that exact same thing happen at some point in their history. Welcome. Welcome. Is this your first trip to the club? Awesome. You know, they're just trying to get it right. And it's a little bumpy getting there. I don't have a problem with it at all. I mean, I get it. The calls were wrong, and you'd like to see him get right, and you'd like to see him have a way to fix it on site in real time without stopping the game for 15 minutes. But, you know, this I get all that. All these things are obvious results of what we're trying to fix and what we've seen happen in recent weeks. So let's just take a breath and say, okay, we'll get it right eventually, and the guys are going to get better at it. Because I'll say this, this happens, and I know it does. The league sends the video clips. If they don't watch TV, these officials, when they're on their free time during the week or whatever they're doing, the league sends them out and says, listen, guys, yes to this, no to that. Yes to this, no to that. And here's a couple others. Yes to these. See this one, and this one. Yes. This one, and this one, and this one. No. They give them all those instructions, you know, so they get better at it.
Yeah.
So, you know, pump the brakes. You know, the roughing the passer stuff will get straightened out. They'll tweak the sky judge, give him a little bit more leeway, and they'll get better for it. But this, I mean, you even had Peter King, our buddy, he said, oh, wow, the league can't afford too many more days like this. what are you talking about?
Like, it's
going
to change anything.
Like, seriously? like this call in the regular season against the Atlanta Falcons is going to bring the league crashing down. I don't know if I'm going to have a hard time seeing that.
Yeah. We could talk more about that at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We're also discussing the following. We know that the Bills have gone deep into their depth chart in light of all the injuries they've sustained through the first month plus of the season. Which Bills depth player has impressed you the most and why? We have some choices for you on the tweet sheet at @1BillsLive. A, Khalil Shakir, B, Damar Hamlin, C, Quentin Morris, or D, somebody else? Because there are other candidates. So you tell us which Bills depth player has impressed you the most and why. Early returns have Shakir out in front with Damar Hamlin not far behind. And, you know, no love for the tight end. Somebody vote for Quentin Morris, please. But let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got an open line for you there, and we'll see what you guys have to say. We go to Steve in Amherst first. What do you got for us, Steve?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Obviously, I'm in the best mood ever because why not? We're 4-1. This is a fun season so far. I have a couple points to make. The first one is Justin Tucker. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to talk about Justin Tucker. But that made me laugh yesterday with how long you stayed on the call with that guy. I was dead. My wife doesn't listen with me normally, and she looked at me and was like, are you kidding me? Why haven't they hung up on him yet? And I'm like,
yeah.
Well,
we try to give everyone their time.
I appreciate it. So the one thing with the roughing the passer calls that I have to talk about, there was two things from the game last night. I believe there was a point where Mason Crosby got a free shot right into Mahomes, and he just wrapped him up and, like, hugged him but held him standing. And I feel like the game changed last night because of the calls that have been happening, and Justin Tucker was like – Justin Tucker's on my mind.
Max Crosby.
Max Crosby wrapped up Mahomes and just hugged him in the air and then said until the whistle blew and then just put him down nicely. So I wonder if that's going to be like something we see because they're afraid to do anything to the quarterbacks. But again, like you've been saying, Steve, I don't think this is going to change the game too much. I think they're going to course correct themselves and fix it. And I'm totally fine with it. It's just, I think also the other thing is we see it a lot now because a lot of people are watching Red Zone, and that game was live on Red Zone on Sunday when Brady got hit. So a lot of people reacted more. And then the last night was nationally televised.
Right.
And then the last thing to talk about is the Bills' defense on Sunday. Man, I know the offense was on all cylinders, but I think the defense, my friend and I were talking about how the Bills' defense has a bend-don't-break philosophy and how I think Kenny Pickett threw for 330 yards or something close to that. And you think that you'd see at least 21, maybe 28 points on the board when a QB has that many yards. But you see the three, and you're like, man, they really didn't break. They bent a little, and then they shut them down right in the red zone or when they needed to. Obviously, a couple missed kicks help. But I think the defense is playing on another level, and since you just brought up the player that's in depth that's appreciated, Khalil Shakir is my answer because I expected good things, but the difficulty of the catches he's making are incredible and so much fun to watch. And I think he's just on another level for a fifth-round rookie. So I love the season. I love the show, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call. The red zone defense, incidentally, was not very good out of the chute the first 3 weeks. The Bills were somewhere. They had given up seven touchdowns. They hadn't given up many possessions in their red zone.
Yeah.
But when they did, they were giving up touchdowns. They gave up seven of their first eight possessions allowed down there for touchdowns. But then in the Ravens game, they improved. You know, obviously Poyer with the big pick at the end of the game was a red zone stop.
Yeah, they're,
and they carried that into last week.
They're tied for ninth in red zone efficiency defensively. They're
they basically went from 21st to ninth in 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, it's a small sample size. So if you had one of those games where you do it, it's you know, excuse these statistics a little bit further than you'd like. But they're top 10, but still, I think you're right. That's one of their – that's been their issue for more than just this year. It's been an ongoing thing for
them. Improvement is encouraging, though, and, you know, you can argue whatever you want here, but takeaways down there are gigantic because now you're not even giving them 3 points,
right?
You know, with the interception – in the end zone in Baltimore by Poyer. And then didn't they have another? Oh, no, the interception was out in the middle of the
field. Yeah, it's interesting because their offense is 21st in red zone efficiency. They're like bottom third.
That's where their defensive red zone was as well in terms of keeping opponents out of the end zone. But like I was saying, in the last 2 weeks, they've gotten some stops and they've knocked that percentage down.
As good as their offense has been, it's almost better when they strike from deep. You know, they go you know, they're better because they don't get in the red zone.
Well, and last week they were only 1-for-4 in the red zone, but nobody cares because they scored 98 and 62-yard touchdowns.
Right.
And they had scoring drives that were like 10 seconds.
Right, and you think about, you know, Quentin Morris fumbling it away as he goes in.
That's one of them that didn't get
in. And that's, you know, that's a crusher. You know, instead of going 2-for-4, they're 1-for-4, and that's a big percentage rise. So, yeah, it's a good point. Their defense – is playing extremely well, and it starts up front, no question. I think, you know Jordan Phillips being out, but Ed Oliver being back in, and those defensive ends all making hay. I think that Greg Rousseau and Von Miller are really, really good players, and they're playing like it. And Epinesa has shown up a little bit this year as well. So has Boogie. In fact, early in the season, Boogie got off to a blazing start.
Yeah,
he was winning. So they're loving where they're at on their D line, and I think that has made a difference and a ripple effect into the back end. And you can say what you want about how banged up they've been back there and the depth that they has been tested back there. You know, at one point you're starting two rookies on the corners. That front has made a difference for those guys.
Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550. We go to Tom on the west side next. Let's see here, Tom. Can I punch him up? What's going on? There he is. Tom, hey. What do you got for us?
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Steve. Steve, everybody's always giving you kudos. Chris, I elect you for the Buffalo Sportscasters Hall of Fame.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very nice.
There you go. I'm all about
it. The check's in the mail, Tom.
Yeah, let's...
There you go, Steve. Something in support.
Let's pump Brownie's tires for a while. I'm all about it.
What do you got for us, Tom?
Okay, I was going to say to yesterday's question, which you're touching on today, the thing that impresses me the most about the Bills is their backups. And I got to give a shout-out to Shakir. He's going to get my vote, even though I didn't do it on the Internet.
That's fine.
And then I'll have Hamill behind him. And then I want to give a shout-out to Dobson because you didn't have him on the list.
No, I wanted to put him on there, but we always leave the D for other on the choices there. And,
yeah, Dotson's
but, yeah,
been
you,
good.
You can submit Dotson. I would have voted for him, too. I thought he had a masterful game last week running the defense. I mean, he's not just out there playing. He's running the defense.
That's right. He's taking Edmund's spot.
Yeah. So good choices there, Tom. And hey.
On both those sacks yesterday, I thought they were both legal. And they were BS calls by the refs. Because, I mean, how are they going to train their students to tackle when they're using proper technique?
Yeah, it's
You're right, Tom.
It's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, we've
for sure.
we've talked about that as well, and we agree with you. Both those, neither one of those, the Tom Brady. I think you're talking about the Tom Brady and the Mahomes roughing the passer. Yeah, neither one of those was roughing the passer, no question about it. And I think everybody agrees with it. And I'll say this: you always hear too, you know, people sitting on their couch saying, you know, football players don't tackle good anymore. They're blah 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 blah. Listen, it's hard to tackle well because you can't grab them anywhere that is available. You can't get them by the horse collar. You can't get them by the, you know, the top of the jersey in the back. You can't, you know. And the way they build these jerseys these days, all these guys, you might not realize it, but it's not like the shirt you wear where you can reach up and grab it and pull it away from you like when you're perspiring and stuff. They're taped down.
Yeah, those guys need help just putting them on.
Right, you can't
pads.
Even get them on. So they're taped down. So these guys are like, it's trying to pinch the skin on a fish. You know, you just can't do it. It's too tight, right? So
good analogy, Steve.
So that's why it's hard to tackle because you can't get a handful of anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you, and now, too, you can't tackle them. You can't hit them up around the head. You know, you can't target head and neck
low,
and all that.
Go
if you
high.
Go low, you know, if you go low, guys are just hopping over you, a la Josh Allen. All these guys, you know.
And you can't do full body weight.
Saquon Barkley and all that. So it's harder and harder. You see these guys, like he mentioned. The sack on Mahomes, remember, and that's the way these – and listen.
On Derek Carr. I think.
Whatever they're allowed to do, and I'll just say it, what it is, whatever they're allowed to do, they're going to leverage that to inflict the most pain and suffering they can on the guy they're tackling, which means now if you get a guy around the waist, you're going to ragdoll him to the ground as hard as you can. That's what happened to Tua. That's what happened to Tom Brady. But that's also why Max Crosby didn't – he couldn't get him off his feet, so he just held him.
Yeah.
That's all that's left. So he ends up, they end up.
It's the safest sack you can make.
Right. They end up waltzing for a half a second until the official says, okay, he's got him. That's it. They're asking these defenders to tackle guys without anything to grab onto, without being able to hit them in certain places, particularly up high, because obviously,
head
if you're running
area.
Around. You want to hit them on the very top to get more leverage so they knock them off their back because it's better. The leverage means it's better to knock them off balance if you hit them high. If you hit them in the waist, they'll just move over and keep running. Or at the other end, at their feet, you take their feet out. You can hit them. You can't hit them at the head, so you got to hit them at the feet. Now you got guys that are jumping over you.
Can't hit them low either,
You
Steve.
Can't hit them.
You're not allowed to.
Right. So, I mean, even as a defender, you got – think about it.
Limited options.
I'm a 5'10", 200-pound, 5'11", 200-pound corner or safety, and I'm coming up, and Deion Dawkins is coming out on ahead of Josh Allen on a sweep. I can't take him on low.
Yeah.
I can't submarine
him. Yeah,
are you kidding me?
You can't cut.
It's hard to play. The five presidents text loop was going crazy last night.
Oh,
you can imagine,
imagine
what Bruce had to say about the guy sacking and all that.
We'll hear that from Thurman in the second hour of the show.
There's nothing you can do. It's almost impossible to play defense in the NFL the way we watched guys play defense when we were growing up.
Oh, it's totally
impossible.
Yeah, it's totally different now. Let's take a quick break, but we're getting to more of your phone calls when we return. Which Bills depth player has impressed you the most and why? Choices are there for you at One Bills Live, but give us your submission next. Stay tuned. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Hey, Bills fans. This week's game sponsor when the Bills visit the Chiefs is Gabe's Collision. Gabe's Collision has been family-owned and operated since 1964, featuring three convenient full-service collision centers with on-site rental cars throughout Western New York. Each facility carries various manufacturer certifications, state-of-the-art technology, and the most highly trained professionals statewide. Seamless, efficient, pristine craftsmanship. Get back in the game with Gabe's Collision, the official auto collision repair center of the Buffalo Bills. We're going to get back to your phone calls now as we are asking you today which Bills depth player has impressed you the most so far and why. Next up on the docket is Tim in Lackawanna. What do you got for us, Tim?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Travis Kelce, he always kills us when he plays us. Now, I know the Bills just play zone all the time. Can't they chuck him at the line? I mean, or disrupt him somehow, put a spy on him, double him. Got to do something with him.
Yeah, I mean, if the four touchdowns last night weren't a reminder, they should be. The key here this time, though, and you can speak to this, Steve, if you want, they don't have to worry about Tyreek Hill now. He's no longer part of the equation. And I thought, you know, over the last several years that Kelce and Hill expertly played off of one another, and Mahomes knew how to work with both of those guys. There were times where they would line those two guys up on the same side of the field. Good luck with that. Like, what are you doing to defend that? Those two guys? Now you don't have Hill as part of the equation. And I'm not saying Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the hyphen brothers, as I call them, I'm not saying those guys can't hurt you or don't have roles. But Kelce is the number one priority this week, and you can focus more attention on him because you don't have to worry about Tyreek Hill running 50 miles an hour behind you.
Yeah. They've tried all the things you suggested, Tim, and not only the Bills. I mean, you can talk all you want about the Bills and how he kills all them. Well, you know what? He does it to everybody.
He did it to the Raiders last night.
He did it to the Raiders last night. Four touchdowns and 25 yards total. I mean, yeah. If you hold him to 25 yards, awesome. He's got four touchdowns. Oh, well, not so awesome.
The yards don't matter as much as the points.
Yeah.
So, he had 25 yards and 24 points.
It's unbelievable.
He had almost more points than receiving yards.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, the guy's a monster. He plays like a monster. Andy Reid uses him like a monster. Pat Mahomes.
He's his favorite monster.
He's his favorite monster. The guy's a monster. And, you know, you got to deal with it. You can hold him down, maybe, you know. You got to just make the other. Maybe if you make the other guys beat you, but
that's what I was going to say.
I've seen guys do this. Tony Gonzalez used to do this on the red zone. He would come off the ball. They would have literally a safety and a linebacker, and they would just vice him. And I don't mean by vice him. I mean they both just grab him, push themselves into him, and hold him there like he was a punt gunner.
Yeah,
that's what they would do. Wouldn't let him off the ball. Just hold him there. And they would do that. So Tony Gonzalez ain't going to beat us. Maybe you do that to Travis Kelce, but you can't hold him. You know, sooner or later he's going to wrestle free. So, and plus you got two guys right there, and that opens up a lot of space in the back end of your defense. So, you know, where you take it away there, somebody else may step up. But I get it. And, Tim, I know it's frustrating to watch, you know, a guy that consistently beats your team or has good games against your team, but they're trying everything. Everything you can think of, they've thought of twice.
I'm just telling you, they spin the dial on the coverage assignments all the time.
Yeah.
Over the years, I have seen the following people in coverage against Travis Kelce. Matt Milano, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, Dane Jackson, Micah. I've seen all of these guys matched up against him in one coverage or another over the last 3 years.
Edmonds.
Everybody. I mean, it just... They've tried everything with varying degrees of success. But your point, Tim, is well taken because I will say this. Back when Mark Kelce was still on the Bills radio network with me, this was a weekly topic of discussion because the thing that would drive him nuts as a former safety is watching guys get free releases, especially players the caliber of a Travis Kelce. Why there isn't more collision at the line of scrimmage just to reroute him for half a second. Maybe you don't cover him perfectly, but maybe you've disrupted the timing of the play. And look, I know one of his touchdowns last night was an off-script play. You know, he comes all the way across the formation underneath, and Mahomes is scrambling out, and he heads back the other way. Bing, he hits him with a short dart, and he runs to the other side of the field for a touch. I mean, it's a broken play. There's nothing you can do there, but... Maybe on 8 routes out of 10, if you can just collision him at the line of scrimmage, delay him, disrupt the timing of the passing game for the Chiefs, maybe you have a little more success. I don't know.
Yeah.
They never used to collision Gronk at the line of scrimmage all those years in New England. They give him a free release off the line.
Well, here's the thing. If you can set up to pound the guy off the line of scrimmage, you can put Tremaine Edmonds right over his head. You can put Vaughn or Greg Rousseau right over his head. The simple fact of the matter is once you start doing that, they just – Mahomes just barks out something. He steps off the line of scrimmage and motions across the other side. And then what are you going to do? He's in motion. You can't – you're going to follow him and then take a shot at stopping him when he's on the run and you miss?
Yeah.
It's the same problem. They can make that guy have any kind of release they can dictate if they're willing to take the time to do it. If they
or
got
they
him
could
in
stack
line,
him, too, and stack
and
him
they
behind
could stack
somebody.
Him. They could put him off the line of scrimmage and have, you know, the Hyphen brothers shielding him. So
thanks for picking up on
all that. All that stuff, Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster, all those guys can line up to protect. They can do anything they want with him. That's the problem. And when he got an offense, particularly like an Andy Reid offense where you got this guy and they're going to give him free reign, whatever you do, they're going to have an answer for. The key is not letting them know what you're going to do before you do it.
Mm.
That leads to free releases because you're trying to stem into it after the snap. You don't want to put two guys on his nose right away because Mahomes sees and he goes, Kels, let's move over here. And then what are you going to do? You're done.
Yeah.
Your little plan went out the window. So you can't let them know. That's the trick of the whole thing.
Let's go back to the phones and to Jeff in Buffalo next. What do you got for us, Jeff? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well.
I just, you know, a couple of points on last night's game. I think we got to get the NFL number one, the referees, everything. The game is too lopsided to the offenses, and I get it. They want to see a lot of points scored. The game's more exciting. But on the sack last night with the sack fumble, why can't they make two calls? The ball was out before he drilled him into the ground. So they recover the ball. It's Kansas City's ball. And now there's an unnecessary roughness penalty towards him. And then the other call that really bothered me was on the field goal attempt when they had a 4th and 20 and somebody held in the middle of the line, 5 yards, automatic first down. It's just, it's too easy for the offense to get those kind of breaks. I'll just hang up and listen to you guys.
Yeah, I get you. And I said that too. But let me tell you something. You're not allowed for a defensive lineman to, you know, the offensive lineman, you're trying to get in there to rush a field goal. What they do is, as an offensive lineman fires out to protect on the goal, on the field goal attempt, you don't charge at him. You let him come off and you pull him further off, opening up a gap in their protection where another guy goes through. That's called a pull and shoot technique. It's illegal. The Raiders coach their guys to do it, and it's illegal. And they gave up a missed field goal as a result of coaching their guys to do something illegal. So you can say whatever you want. I don't have a problem with that.
The issue with the fumble,
you're right,
on the
though.
Roughing the passer, it's a valid point that you make.
Yes.
You should allow a change of possession when a defensive player makes a play like that. The problem is, and Carl Cheffers explained this, the head referee last night, in a pool interview with one of the Kansas City reporters, he said the reason there wasn't change of possession on the play despite the penalty is because the quarterback still is under the protection of the roughing the passer penalty, even if the ball is no longer in his possession. He cited an example of, we call roughing the passer after a pass is away. If a quarterback is hit in the head or neck area or down around below his knees and the pass is away, we will still call roughing the passer. There's times where quarterbacks complete passes and then they tack 15 yards on top of that for roughing the passer. So the Carl Cheffers was arguing last night, this is ball out of the quarterback's hands also, but he's in the pocket, and he still falls under the protections of roughing the passer, even though he doesn't have the ball anymore, and that's why it was officiated that way last night.
So what that means, too, is say Carr gets the ball off, and he throws an interception.
Yeah.
It still comes back.
Yep.
So the fumble's irrelevant. The fumble and fumble recovery is irrelevant. It's just like if he'd thrown a interception and then got flung to the ground, play all that comes back.
It's all negated, yeah.
So in hindsight, all of that stuff you're saying about what happened to Mahomes last night or to Derek Carr last night on the Jones sack, it was called correctly. You may not like it.
Yeah, under the letter of the law, right.
But that's what it was called correctly. We don't like it, but if you're going to you got to – the problem is that there is ripple effects. And, like, in the instance I just described where you throw an interception, it comes back because of roughing the passer, we're all okay with that because that's the rule and we get it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same as that. But it's really not. You know what I'm saying? It's ruled the same as that for good reason, but this is different because the ball was right there, and the reason the roughing happened was because the guy was getting possession of the ball that was free in the pocket. That makes this different, but it's ruled the same way. They did it the right way, called it the right way. Now they need to fix it.
Yeah,
and we can all come up with obvious ways to fix it.
It'll undoubtedly be a topic of discussion this coming offseason by the competition committee. Do we adjudicate that differently when the ball is stripped out and the guy, just because he made a play and now he's tripping over the quarterback because he has the football, falls on top of the guy? Yeah. There's always exceptions.
The Tom Brady pass, the roughing the passer call on Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay, Atlanta. Bad call, poor use of the rule. It's an overreaction to what we'd seen happen with two of the weeks before. It should never have been called. It was a bad call, and there's no reason to fix it. The guy just called too soft a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
The call last night in Kansas City was called correctly, but it's in a situation that needs to be addressed differently.
There should be a different
There should be a different rule for that.
Yeah.
So it's – now this conversation tells you how complicated it is when you get into these discussions about changing
the rules.
That's
why, you know, asking these refs to change how they're calling this particular infraction
on the fly
within the scope of the regular season at regular season speed without any run up or preparation, it's a hard ask, and it's why we've seen some inconsistencies this past week. Got to take a break here. More of your phone calls next. Those of you holding at 803-0550, hang tight. We'll try to get to you here in the next segment on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. He's at the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown, Snapdragon apples. This Bills season, head to your local Wegmans to experience the epic flavor and monster crunch of Snapdragon apples, the official apples of your Buffalo Bills. Steve is eagerly anticipating the arrival of those here in the studio. We'll see.
They're a myth right now, as far as we're concerned.
Trust me, they do exist. And we will see them in due course.
We're shameless, too, about asking for free stuff.
Let's get back to the phones, though, as we are asking you today, which Bills death player has impressed you the most? There are choices on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live, but feel free to make a choice of your own if you're calling in at 803-0550. But we go back to the phones and to Jerry in Livonia next. Jerry, you're on One Bills Live. What do you got for us?
Well, first of all, I want to say hello to you guys.
Yes, hello.
I pick Elam for the player because isn't he the only cornerback that's played every game?
Dane Jackson's missed time.
Taryn's been playing every game.
Oh, Taryn, yeah. Taryn Johnson's been in every game. Thank God.
I guess on the edges, I guess, yeah. I pick him because, you know, I think he learned something Sunday. I think he's learning. And the fact that we're doing so well, considering he's playing so much, I think he's going to turn out to be a real gem. But the other reason why I called, gentlemen, is the fact that I wanted to make a comment about the roughing the passer.
Sure.
Thing you guys are talking about. Well, I heard a suggestion on ESPN, I think it was last night, that they were talking about making all roughing the passer penalties reviewable, kind of like they do, you know, of the helmet to helmet kind of thing.
Right.
You know, that way maybe they'll retract it if they don't think it. I don't know. But I thought at least it's taken another look at. You know what I mean? I thought that was a good suggestion. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Steve was talking about a sky judge.
They've got the sky judge overlooking everything, and it's been really, I think, highly successful because they have a strict view of what they can and cannot do. So the sky judge will come back. And like last week in the Pittsburgh game, Pickens catches the ball at the 1 yard line, gets his second foot down. They call it a catch before they even spot the ball. The official, I can't remember our official from the game's name, comes out and says, hey, after further discussion on the field.
It's John Hussey.
John Hussey says it's an incomplete pass. Well, the discussion on the field was the sky judge coming down, seeing the review, seeing the replay and saying, hey, you missed that. He was out. It was obvious. Spot the ball back at the line of scrimmage. And that was it. Boom, presto, change-o. That's what could happen. Theoretically, that's what could happen with a roughing the passer call too. But it just calls for one more step down the road where the eye in the sky has full control over everything. I don't know how far the league wants to go with that because, like everything else, it'll have unforeseen ripple effects into other areas, and then you're down a slippery slope. But I'm kind of with you. It should be just about everything should be reviewable by that guy, but right now I think they're very limited, or you know, strictly limited to whatever it is they're able to review. That's not one of them yet. That may change.
Yeah. Let's get back to the phones. David in Orchard Park is up next. What do you got for us, David? Oh, hold on, let me get you. Is this not coming up? There he is. David, what do you got for us?
I'm here.
Yeah. Sorry, we had trouble punching you up there. We got you now.
Okay. My question and my thought about is about concussion protocols versus Josh. Because the way he runs and the way he gets hit in the background, he could easily get, you know, a little tap. He did on one of the plays earlier in the second half when he ran. He got knocked backwards, hit his head a little bit, jumped up. However, if he had hit a little harder, took 2 seconds to get up, he could have been in concussion protocol.
Yeah.
So my thought about what the Bills could think about, you know, doing that.
So you're thinking, like, have him run less so he doesn't fall victim to that kind of a call now, with the ataxia now being added to concussion protocol as an automatic no-go for the rest of the game? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know about not running at all, but, you know, it should be a concern, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I get it, David, and I understand why, because I'm telling you right now, have you seen what got Teddy Bridgewater removed from the game last week, Steve? It's the first play from scrimmage for Miami. He goes back to pass. He gets hit as he throws. He falls down. He doesn't slam his head on the turf. He falls on his back. He gets up. There is no stumbling whatsoever, like none, in my estimation. And the ref is like, whoa, hey, oh, we got a guy. He's got trouble over here. And they remove him from the game.
Here it is right now. We're going to see it right now. And
MSG viewers are seeing. He gets hit. He doesn't really hit his head. You can't see there because he falls into the white of the end zone.
Right. Well, here's the thing, too. The official walks up on him and looks at him, and he doesn't look right. I mean, to the official.
I don't know. To me, I mean, he
gets
hit.
Sauce Gardner whacks him.
He hits the ground, but his head doesn't really hit the ground. He does get up slowly, but there's no wobbling. There's no stumbling. Like, he's watching the rest of the play. You know, no freeze pose like we saw with Tua. He gets removed from the game. And he had an elbow injury because, as you saw there, Sauce's helmet hit his elbow. When he gets up, the only thing he really does is he's shaking his hand out because his elbow's killing him. And that was it. He got tossed. He got pulled from the game.
None of the replays we're seeing now have enough of that after the play for us to make an evaluation.
So I saw a different replay that lasted far longer. It was an independent camera from a local New York television station. All he's doing is shaking his arm because he got hit like right on his funny bone.
Right.
And they actually diagnosed him after the game with an elbow injury. But he got removed under the new addition to the concussion protocol. So, yeah, it's a concern.
Man.
You know, Josh gets – I'm right with him. Josh gets up slow from some kind of hit, even though he's fine. They could say, oh, yep.
Well,
you know, you stumbled. Yep. He could get –
that's
he could
right.
Fall victim to the turf monster and stub his toe on the turf. And they go, oh, he stumbled. Get him out of the game. And now he can't come back in the game. It could happen.
No kidding. I mean, guys, it's been 5 years of this. Yeah, he got put out of the New England game when he was a rookie because he got a concussion.
Well, yeah.
That's what happened to Tyrod Taylor in a playoff game for the Buffalo Bills when they're driving to try and tie it up and win. Tyrod gets whacked helmet to helmet. He gets up and he's fine. The official goes, I don't know, and sends him off in a playoff game when you're on a winning drive. Welcome to the party, everybody.
I know.
Josh runs and he's going to go down.
What I'm saying is there's an even greater attention being paid to this by the officials now because of what's been added to the concussion protocol by the league and the Players Association.
Yeah.
The slightest bit of hesitation by a quarterback.
Absolutely.
The slightest bit of equilibrium.
I was worried about Josh this last weekend when he got dumped by
Cam Hayward. Yeah.
It looked bad. It looked worse than any highlight we've shown today on the show. It looked worse than any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he got up like nothing. And then the next pass he threw was like, whoa.
It was off the mark.
What are you doing? And the only thing that got me off of worrying, I'm like, this is bad. The only thing that got me off that main train of thought was the fact that after he threw that horrific pass, he ran over to Diggs and started going, you know, they started having a real
talking
conversation.
Talking about the play.
I was like, oh, all right, he's fine. But up until that point, I was like, I don't know. I was worried.
Yeah.
And that was this last game, this week. So, yeah. I mean, if you guys are worried about, well, now there's an extra sensitivity. Listen, you're late to the party, bro, Sleevage. You should have been worried about this.
It's going to be even more heightened
you've
now.
You should have been worried about this since the Baltimore Ravens game 5 years ago, 2018, in a driving rainstorm. That's when the worry should have started because it's been going on since then. And the fact that you think maybe an official's going to call something, where you been?
I think there's a greater chance it gets called now.
And
a quarterback is removed when they shouldn't be. I understand they're trying to protect these guys.
Yeah, there's a greater chance, but they're going to make. They're doing it because they don't want Josh off the field any more than we do.
Yeah,
you think the networks want Josh Allen standing with a baseball cap
watching
Case Keenum play?
Yeah, but Steve, this is different because it's not just, hey, he's got to go get checked for a head injury with the opportunity to return to the game. It's, no, I see ataxia, he's out. For the rest of the game, no questions asked, no tests performed, no way back in the game, over, day over. It's different. It's different now with this addendum to the concussion protocol. Because you just saw Tua come back in the game. We didn't know where the hell he was in week three. He missed three plays.
Here's what you got to remember. The risk for Josh is identical. The rules may make it different. But the risk, and all we should care about
is
whether
risk.
Josh is healthy.
Well, I agree with that.
It's not about whether Josh is healthy and can play or Josh has got a concussion and can still keep playing.
No, it's not about that. No, I'm not asking for
and
that.
And that's what the difference is. They should have taken Tua out of the Buffalo game, and they didn't. Nobody cares because he got whacked 4 days later. Now they're all up in arms. And it's this head injury. And I don't know why head injuries all of a sudden push people's buttons. Because let me tell you something. I was just as upset when Tre'Davious went down with a non-contact ACL because that's a year of his life that he does nothing else but sit there and have people working on him and him working on him. I get it. Fans are all about this because they picture a guy not being able to function cognitively later in life. Let me tell you something. I care about them orthopedically. Their hands hurt. They're getting their hips replaced. That's just as important as everything else. So all this stuff about – hey, maybe he won't be able to play. But you shouldn't care if that's the case. It's not about whether they can play or not. It's about are they going to be healthy. So if that's it's got to be one or the other. So spare me the bleeding heart stuff about how this guy's got a head injury, but I don't really care about this guy getting his femur fractured.
I don't think anybody's saying that, Steve. I'm just
saying. It's the same logic. They're missing the point. They're using the same logic. They're saying that this head injury thing and coming out of the game for maybe what's not an injury is really, really egregious and risky because of Josh when something coming out with – it's okay if he goes out there and plays with a busted thumb or a busted arm or a torn rotator cuff on his off shoulder, all of that stuff. Nobody cares about that stuff. Come on. If you're going to care, care. If you don't, don't. But the guy – you know, and
I'm just saying it's not going to be without controversy because the Dolphins are probably arguing that Teddy Bridgewater was wrongfully removed from a game that they wound up losing because they had to start their rookie seventh-round quarterback, their third stringer, and they lost to the Jets.
And ironically, who's to blame for that? I think the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, karma is a you-know-what, but still in all, I think it's going to be something that's not going to be without controversy because they're not always going to get it right. But I'd rather have them err on the side of caution. I'm with you.
There
you go. It's not going to be without controversy. I'm waiting to see it again at some point this season.
And here's the thing, too. You're right. It's going to happen. Somebody's going to walk away without a concussion who's not going to be allowed to play.
Yeah. And it could cost the team a game.
And it could be Josh Allen this Sunday in Kansas City.
It's possible. We got to take a break because we got Thurman Thomas waiting in the wings, the Hall of Famer coming your way next year on One Bills Live. Stay tuned.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hour number two on Tuesday of Chiefs Week. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker here with you, along with the Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, making his weekly appearance. How you doing, Thurm?
Good, good. Chief Week, huh?
Chiefs Week, yeah. Wow. They're practically a division opponent, Thurm. We see this team just about every year now.
Every year now, right?
Just play them again next year in the schedule.
What?
Yeah, they play the AFC West next year. As
really?
A division, and they're going to have to go there again.
Come on. Do you think they'll go there again?
Yeah. Yep.
Because if they win the division and the Bills win the East, the home and home falls that way.
Well, it's because the last time the Bills played the AFC West in 2020, they had the Chiefs here.
In 2020 and with no fans.
With no fans.
Yeah.
And they had the Chargers here.
Right.
And then they played Vegas on the road and Denver on the road. That was that 48-19 beatdown with the Jerry Hughes fumble return for a touchdown. That was that road game in Denver. Mm. So now, in 2022, they get Denver and Vegas here, and they go to Kansas City and to LA Chargers. So, yes, on the road again.
Oh, my God.
Back to Arrowhead. Where the Bills, you know, won in the regular season last year, but obviously not in the playoffs.
Right.
So...
It's almost, it could be like, well, that's a hard place to get home field advantage at that place. It's pretty much
the way
Kansas
that thing
City,
is contoured. It just throws all the noise right down on the field. It is one of the loudest places I have ever seen in the
I'll
NFL.
Tell you what, it was loud. We weren't there, obviously. Last
you guys played
game.
Some Sunday and Monday night
but
games there
you
in
what,
your day.
Got crushed.
I'll bet you what they were loud. They were loud last night.
Yeah,
and that official.
Oh my God. They were loud last night.
The indignation was coming out.
Yeah, and they had cameras right up on the first row of fans.
Did you see that guy?
Did you see that one lady?
Gosh, that is a meme.
What are you doing?
Did you see the guy with the hat with the visor backwards, and he has a
Chiefs
red
blazer
on, and
he's letting them have it.
Oh my gosh, he is screaming, veins popping out. Yeah. You're horrible. I've never seen anybody like that.
It was.
I don't know how different my life would have be to have me in the front row of a stadium doing that for even the Bills. I don't think I could do it.
No.
I couldn't do it.
Are you giving me? Are you telling us you've never been that upset at an official? Because I would challenge you on that.
Even when I got thrown out, I wasn't.
I'm throwing the challenge flag.
Let me just say this. I wasn't even that upset when I got tossed my last game. Now, there were times, and I'll say this, that me getting tossed in my last game, that wasn't even as mad as I'd ever been in an official. It was just a different set of circumstances. I've been really mad at officials.
Oh, yeah. We all have.
Here we go. Wow. Who pulled that out of the archives?
Ooh, well, they're fast with that, aren't
man.
They?
That was quick.
Marv looking at me going, I hate that guy.
Is that
That was Steve's last game.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Is that Johnny Greer?
There he goes. Up the
no,
tunnel.
It was Mike Carey.
Oh, there you
go. You know who else was on that staff?
Oh,
was,
boy.
Was, what's his name? Mike Pereira was on that staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eh, whatever.
I deserve it.
I mean, like you say, that's the Lonnie Johnson game.
That is the Lonnie Johnson.
And we were out of the playoffs, and you knew it wasn't because Bruce came out in, like, sleeves. I'm like, oh, boy. Because it was last game of the season, right?
Yeah. It was cold. It was Green Bay.
It was Green Bay.
That was a bad day.
Yeah, bad
day. All the way around. Kenny Irvin, bless his heart, trying to pull me back.
That's right. Oh. Yeah. We just had Kenny Irvin.
Kenny was just the last
Tasker's teammate last week.
Tasker's teammate.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, last week we had him.
Look at him trying to save me. Bless his heart.
Bless
I wasn't having it.
Didn't happen. Chiefs, Thurm, what'd you think of last night's game? Travis Kelce doesn't have Tyreek Hill as a running mate anymore. Doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, I mean.
What the hell were the Raiders doing?
They're not even, like, really throwing long passes anymore. Mm-mm. Everything is short. I mean, kind of like, you know, 12 and 15 play drives now that Kansas City is doing now. And they're running the ball a little bit more.
They got that committee now, that Pacheco kid.
Yeah.
From, where is he from? Rutgers, I want to say.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm like, you know what? Have somebody else beat me besides Travis Kelce.
Right? I mean, you do it's whatever.
Running all night long.
Yeah, I don't know what the Raiders were thinking game plan-wise here, but clearly Kelce was not enough of a priority.
No, not at all. What are these, four catches for 25 yards?
I was joking with Steve. He had almost as many points as he had yards. He had 24 points and 25 yards.
He had Butch Rhule's career in one night.
Right.
Or Mitch Farratt. Yeah.
Mitch Farratt.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, look at that. He's running around the end zone by himself.
I mean, it's the end of the game. How do you not have anybody on that guy?
Unbelievable.
I don't understand that. I mean, somebody help me there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the Raiders are 1-4 for a reason.
Yeah. Who's the Raiders?
Josh McDaniels.
Okay. No, defensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Now I got to look that up.
That guy needs to.
There's your answer. We don't know who that is.
Right.
We hope we can look it up before he's fired. But
Patrick Graham.
I don't know him.
He was with the Giants before that staff got bounced last year. And I know that Brian Daboll actually tried to keep him.
Really?
He went out to the Raiders because he used to work for the Patriots as an assistant, which is why McDaniels wanted him out there in Las Vegas.
I bet you should have took the Giants.
Might be thinking twice about that choice now.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I'm with you, Thurm. I do anything in my power to neutralize Kelce. And if Valdez-Scantling and Smith-Schuster are good enough to beat me, well, then my hat's off to you. But I'm not letting the guy that's beaten me before and beat me in overtime in the playoff game last year beat me now.
Yeah, that guy will have four catches for 24, 25 yards, but he ain't scoring touchdowns. Not like that. But what do you do? You put Matt Milano on him. I mean, obviously.
They've tried everybody.
Over
the years.
I mean, Micah Hyde has been in that situation where he's covered.
They didn't put Tre'Davious on him in the past.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So, who do they put out there next?
They'll try a ton of different things. They'll double him. They'll in and out him. They'll over the top him.
They'll bracket him. Crack him at the line with Vaughn.
But even if you're going to, like, it used to be at the red zone, I brought this up to Brownie.
Right.
Romeo Crennel did this where Tony Gonzalez was the tight end. He'd have two guys just like he was a punt gunner. They'd just jump on him and grab him, push him back into the backfield, and just hold him there. And that works fine until the guy takes a step off the line of scrimmage and goes in motion across the formation.
Right,
and he's
exactly.
like, oh, geez, now what are we going to do? Right?
Or he's there in a stack. You're stacking behind somebody.
So they'll just hide him. So you can't really – you can have that as a plan, but if they get an inkling that you're going to do that, they just move the guy.
The guy's never been – he's coming off the line of scrimmage, and he's never getting bumped.
Well, that's by design, too.
Yeah, right.
So they put him in motion,
still,
they move him and all that.
You
so.
Can still move him or whatever. You can still have somebody on the line of scrimmage
him,
jam
right?
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just like a free release. I don't care if he's 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. If I'm a defensive back, I'm going to sit there until he comes to me right there on the line of scrimmage, and I'm going to get a jam on him.
Yeah.
I mean,
just to kind of disrupt the timing, right?
Right.
Like something.
You got to do something. You're just letting them run
free release is suicide.
Good luck, Leslie and Sean.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think this is going to be because I know I'm a little bit of a prisoner at the moment. We've been talking about all this stuff that's going on in the league with, you know, how difficult it is to play defense. We were talking about it on the Five Presidents text loop last night.
Yeah.
You know, guys saying you can't even tackle guys anymore, particularly in the pocket. So I think this is going to be one of those games where you got to score with these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, like the playoff game was last January.
Yeah. High scoring game. Both teams are about to score over 35.
Yeah, and it's the first one of 50 wins.
I will say this: the Chiefs' defense has not done a good job of stopping anybody this year. The Bills are tied for first in points allowed,
right,
with San Francisco.
The Bills are holding people off the board. Yeah,
the Chiefs are 23rd in points allowed.
But they're at home. They're at home. They're coming. They're flying.
They're up 29 to the Raiders.
You know what? I take our pass rush over this.
That's a
huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference. Now that pass rush, you're gonna have to get rid of the ball, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, the Raiders had some success last night, at least early on. And they tightened it up.
Yeah.
They got a little better. So we'll see if the Bills can have more consistent success throughout the game. But you know what happens. I mean, things get better as they roll on. And this fourth and one over the top to Devontae Adams was a brilliant play call, I thought. It was great. It shows a lot of confidence in two really good players. But it stopped.
What you do.
Right. You can't.
Can anybody stop us right now? I'm looking at – and you know what Gabe Davis reminded me of? Really. And people might say, whatever. You know, like, he's not fast. He's like Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice wasn't fast. 4'6", right?
Yeah.
But he caught
and
stuff.
And Gabe is like – I mean, you see him run. It's almost like he's hurting sometime to run. But he gets down. He pulls separation away from guys.
So the most impressive thing, I talked to Gabe after the game in the locker room, and I was asking him about the first touchdown. He knew before the snap that the safety was not lined up in a way that was going to allow him to help the corner that was lined up against him.
Oh,
he
okay.
said the leverage was bad. From the start of the play. So he knew, I just give the corner a step out and then get inside of him. That safety, he was too high.
Too
he wasn't
high.
Deep enough,
there, right.
and he couldn't get there in time. Bad angle.
Bad angle.
And now he's chasing, and then once Levi fell down, it was over.
It was over with.
So he knew before the snap, if we can hold up and protect, I got this guy.
Hey, and, I tell you what, though,
and he had him.
And we're talking about Josh and Gabe and Diggs. Offensive line been pretty good.
Yeah.
They have been pretty good.
They've held up.
Don't really get talked about enough. But, I mean, in order to throw passes like this past game, you got to have that offensive line.
On your two-yard line?
On the two-yard line? Exactly. Now, I know Pittsburgh is not the Pittsburgh of old. I mean, past couple of years with T.J. Watt or whatever. But still, two-yard line, that's confidence right there. That's confidence right there. And that kid right there, man, I love him to death. He is just like the toast of the town. You know, I'm thinking one day with this road game, hey, Josh, can I drive you to the airport? Yeah. I mean, he's so good for Buffalo.
Oh, he's perfect
fit. So good for Buffalo. Perfect fit. I mean, just.
Yeah. I mean, he's
great. I'm so glad we got him.
Yeah, he's a rock star and deserves it. And he keeps playing as good, or he's getting a little better. Something new all the time he's doing. It's been great. This game in Kansas City, he really burst onto the scene with the playoff game this last January. I mean, that was when it was like, oh, these guys really are. they were clicking. Plus, the game the week before against New England when you couldn't get him off the field. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make him punt.
Well, unless he scored.
It's really, they were clicking so well then that it raised the expectations almost beyond accomplishing, to fulfilling it. You know? Mm-hmm. But I think in this game, there's no question, this is going to be their toughest game yet. Even with the Dolphins, even with the Baltimore Ravens, I think this is a team, when they showed it again last night, they were down 17, just like the Bills were in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
They fought back before halftime. It was 20-10, just like the Bills were in Baltimore. And they end up winning a one-point game like the Bills, you know, nearly did in Baltimore as a couple-point game. So these two teams, I think, are built a lot alike.
Yep.
I think the Bills' defense is better, no question about it. But being on the road is going to make it tough.
It's tough. It's going to be tough.
Yeah. I told Steve before we came in here to do the show, if the Bills defense can get the Chiefs to punt three times and they don't turn the ball over.
I go four times every quarter.
If they can get them to punt three times and the Bills don't turn it over, which has been a problem because they lead the league in turnovers.
Yeah, I know.
They've turned it over more than they've punted.
They have.
It's just, The stats are just crazy. Yeah.
But
it's
that's nuts. My formula. They get the Chiefs to punt three times
right,
and the Bills don't turn it over. I think that's all they need to win the game.
Yeah.
How about that?
Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, that's nothing. They can
do
that
easy. Can I
have a
couple of turnovers too?
Well,
along with
I mean,
the 3 punts?
Sure. You want dessert also?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I want it all. I want it all.
Exactly.
We need to leave that stadium going into the bye week being like, well, I guess this is the team to beat right here.
Yeah.
I say this, though. Usually when you go in, like you go plus two on a team turnovers, you get two fumble recoveries or a fumble recovery and a pick or two picks and more than they get.
Yeah.
Usually that's a backbreaker. This, for the Chiefs, it's almost got to be like plus four.
Right.
Well, yeah, unless you're getting them to punt, which sometimes is harder than getting a turnover off of that.
They started the game last night against the Raiders, three and out, and another couple of three and outs out of the first three or four possessions.
But you got to
look surprised.
At, you got to look at like Andy Reid too, all the where they're at in that situation. He might not punt because he might be thinking, I got to score.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I got to score. And that's Andy Reid. That's kind of how he goes about things and so, yeah, he's one of them veteran coaches. I ain't punting.
They're very
– yeah.
They're really good, too, because you can tell – and I don't know anything about Josh McDaniels or how the Raiders are doing or how their staff is put together or anything like that, but I know this. Andy Reid and that staff there with Eric Bieniemy and Spagnuolo, and they got some guys in there that you could tell as that game evolved, the Chiefs were evolving within their game plan. They were changing things up because they started out slow offensively, and their defense was struggling. But as the game wore on, they got a handle on it, and they adjusted. Well, that's what the Bills have done really well as well.
Yeah,
adjustments.
So you talk about, and they've shut everybody out in the second half defensively. You know, the Dolphins scored one fourth quarter touchdown, and that's it for the entire year. The Bills are the same, so I think this is really going to be a battle of the coaching staffs to make sure they stay one step ahead and kind of try and stymie one or the other of them to give yourself an edge. I think it's really crucial. And I think it's you got to match Reed and Spagnuolo and Bieniemy and all those guys on that side of the field because they did a really nice job. That was one of the things that gave them the win last night against the Raiders because the Raiders were thumping them early on.
Yeah.
And they got a handle on what they got a handle on what the Raiders were doing both offense and defense.
Are we going to do that?
I don't know, but the RPO game worked pretty good for the run game this past week. I mean, they had some bounces to the outside that looked pretty good.
It's still Pittsburgh.
That's true. You're right.
Always go back to
and
that.
It's not your dad's Pittsburgh. You're
right. And now everything has changed because
they
might not be able to hear.
They might win six games, maybe.
Yeah, you got to do hand signals now for the clap. It's going to be so loud. Yeah. So everything is just totally thrown off.
Let me bounce this off you, Thurman, because we're asking our listeners this today. Give me a Bills depth player these past few weeks that has stepped in and impressed you the most. Do you have a guy in mind, like one of these guys a little further down on the roster that's kind of stepped up and you're like, wow, he gave us a lot more than I anticipated.
Our choices were Shakir, Damar Hamlin, Quentin Morris.
I'm going with Hamlin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like
this is his second year, right?
Yeah.
Second year. I mean, I like him.
He's got good range.
He got great range, and it looks like he's out there. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Got a little pop behind
his
pads.
Got a little pop. Who did he hit last week?
Well, he hit Pickett on a slide, so.
Yeah, right. But I thought it was a perfect timing for it.
It was close.
It was close, but.
I got to be honest. I thought it should have been a penalty.
Oh, come on. See, they just giving everything to these quarterbacks now. Nah, I mean,
yes,
come on.
They did. And listen, I thought the guy was going to get called. I was looking for it.
Nope.
I'm glad he didn't, obviously, but right. I thought, that's going to get called.
Dotson had a nice game last week in for Edmonds.
Yep.
So I thought he did really well.
And
a lot of guys, man.
Taron been just awesome for us, Johnson.
You're almost taking him for granted.
Yes. He has been solid for the last, three years?
Yes.
Yeah, and continues to make plays.
It's hard to find a nickel corner who's playing better than Taron Johnson. I can't even think of another one.
Yeah. Indy's got a good one, Kenny Moore.
Yeah.
But there aren't many.
Yeah. And I like the way Milano's played too.
Oh,
he's looking at probably like all pro.
That's what I was saying. He's playing
He hasn't made a Pro Bowl yet.
He
hasn't made a Pro Bowl yet.
How about that?
This Matt could Milano. Be the year that I mean He's everywhere, and obviously, I mean, he looks a little bit bigger, but he is all over the field.
The job that he and Tremaine did against Lamar in the open field in week four.
At open field, yeah.
They were awesome running him down, tackling, Milano's open field. Open field with Lamar, like, nobody's signing up
nobody's
for that.
Nobody's doing that. No, not at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, Milano's playing at an elite linebacker level right now. He really is. He's playing elite.
Yeah.
And Tremaine was playing that way before he, you know, pulled his ham. He was playing extremely well too. And I think – and I keep getting back to it. Show after show, it comes up at some point where I say, you know, a lot of the success they're having has come from how big a step forward their front four have made.
Vaughn, front eight.
Yeah.
Because they rotate all of them.
You know, Vaughn, DaQuan Jones, Tim Settle, Ed Oliver, Jordan Phillips, the whole crew in there.
Will they have that crew this week?
Don't know if you're going to have Jordan Phillips.
Probably won't have Jordan Phillips, I think. I don't know. We haven't heard anything. But
they just signed Brandon Bryant back to the roster today. Right. So he's back in the fold. And
so
you can do a lot worse than Brandon
Bryant. I think
Bryant.
A lot of that, I think Milano and Edmonds' step forward has been contributed to by how much better they're playing up front.
Absolutely. Those front guys up there, the eight of them, they've been unbelievable.
Yeah,
they've been unbelievable. And look, obviously it's a passing league, but they've done well against the run too.
Mm-hmm.
They've done well against the run, and probably will continue because Kansas City got some nice running backs.
Yeah, they're going full-blown committee now.
Yeah.
Pacheco, Edwards-Helaire, and then McKinnon. I don't know what it is about McKinnon. That guy's like 30 years old. He still has.
Is he 30 years old?
I think he's almost 30, or he'll turn 30 this year.
And it looked like he can still run like a 4.4.
He's got juice.
Right. Right. I noticed
him yesterday.
We talked about him last year, I think.
Yeah. It's
we
like,
did.
Where is this juice coming from?
Right.
He's still got it, though, so more power to him, I guess.
More power to him,
Thurm, do you think – how many points do you think the Bills have to score to kind of be in the safe zone to win this thing?
Safe zone? 35 and up.
35 and up. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least they've done that a couple of times.
They have
this
done
year.
That a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah. 30. I mean, you got to give the Bills' defense a little boost. I mean, because the Raiders held them to 29.
Right.
You got to think the 24? Bills might be able to hold them to mid 20s, at least, you know, field 24. Goal or two field goals less than that. But 35 would make you feel.
Make you feel real nice.
Yeah.
All right, Thurm. Thanks,
appreciate
as always,
it.
For
yeah,
stopping in. Good
absolutely.
To see you. We'll catch up with you next week. Hopefully, we're talking about another Bills victory.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the bye week.
That would be lovely. We'll all vote for that.
Yeah.
Unanimously. Appreciate
sounds
it.
Good.
Thank you.
Bills Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas here every Tuesday joining us. We'll take a break. Be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. The Buffalo Bills and AdPro Sports are teaming up to award varsity head football coaches with the Coach of the Week Award. Week 5 winners in the Buffalo region, Section 6. It's Bennett head coach Steve McDuffie as he led his Tigers to a 20-7 win over Lancaster. Bennett entered the game ranked number 2 in Western New York, while Lancaster was ranked number 1. In Section 5, Rochester region, Coach of the Week is Canisteo Greenwood coach Steve Donlin. His 8-man team won 36-6 over Bolivar Richburg. To remain undefeated, both teams enter the game 5-0. Each Coach of the Week winner will receive a $1,000 grant from the Buffalo Bills and AdPro Sports. We're going to get some more thoughts from you on which Bills depth player has impressed you the most and why. Got a guy in Arizona waiting patiently. It's John. John, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Three things real quick. My first one is Shaquille. I thought for a rookie, he just did a splendid job. His routes, his ball handling, I thought he did a great job. So, number one, Shaquille. Number two, and this is Steve, I know sometimes you get your nose bent on people calling about running backs and everything else. Well, I don't think we need another running back. I think, and I would like to see on short fourth down plays at the goal line, if the Bills had this 300-pound fullback with good hands, instead of using Josh to crumb and smash the line, use this a la Green Bay, or not Green Bay, was the Chicago Bears, the fridge.
Oh, the fridge.
If there's something wrong with using a 300-pound fullback in the backfield on short goal line fourth down shoreline plays. And again, that's I have no idea why we don't do it, but I'm sure you're going to tell me. And my third one is, I'm 85. I've been watching football for a long, long time. And I'm not trying to suck up, Steve, but you are the best I've seen in that spot since I had been watching football. Now, the reason you're not in the Hall of Fame, I don't have a clue. But all I know is these guys, they should get their head out of their you-know-where and put you in the Hall of Fame, and let's get it done, because that's where you belong.
Yeah.
You know, and let's all cut right. the BS. That's what it is. And so, again,
here, here.
My question is there something wrong with putting that 300-pound guy back there to crash the line on short – you know, rather than that shuttle play that ended up as a fumble on the goal line.
Right.
You know, I almost came out of my shoes when I said, "Gee, so can we plow the line, get a big guy in there?" I remember the Fridge doing this. Right. So, I'll get off the line.
Okay.
You guys help me out, and then I'll be interested to hear what you have to say.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, here's the thing, and you're right.
Steve is a big proponent of this.
I'm all about it, John, from Arizona. The Baltimore Ravens have a guy named Patrick, I think it's
Ricard.
Ricard. He's 305 pounds, and they use him as a fullback. Now, he was a defensive lineman / fullback. He started as a defensive lineman. He's got speed, athleticism, good hands, very nimble. They put him back there and move him in the offensive backfield, use him as motions and all that. They'll hand it to him on short yardage as well. I totally agree with you. There's always a place for a big, big-bodied running back who can have sure hands, ball security, and who you can dive into the line, or even on a quarterback sneak, line up at fullback and then push the quarterback over the line. That kind of stuff, yes.
Steve has a candidate on the Bills roster.
Justin Zimmer should be doing that for the Buffalo Bills today. But I digress. So, I'm all about that. You're right. And you know, you're... I'm all about that. You're right. I agree with you totally. That's where the league – I think there should be a guy like that on your squad. There should be a place for that. And I'll say this too. I'm really flabbergasted that teams don't ask players from either side of the ball to help out on the other side in certain situations, situational football, like short yardage goal line. You can't have
they'd be all for it.
Justin Zimmer come in and say, "Hey, I'm eligible. I got a 93 number on, or 92, or whatever is 62.
He's 61.
All right, 61. I'm eligible." And line him up in the backfield. He's got great speed and nimbleness. And it doesn't have to be, you know, Zimmer. It could be anybody. Now, granted, 300-pounders who can run
18
and catch
miles an hour
and all that, they don't just – it's like you don't just go to the bus stop and grab one. But when you got one – I think you got to maximize those skills. And I think Justin Zimmer on the Bills roster would be a perfect example of that. Like we said, Ricard is a guy on Baltimore's roster that they do that with.
Yeah.
He caught a pass two weeks ago. So I'm with you. I think you got to maximize those assets when you've got them. They don't come along very often. I'm not saying go out and draft one in the first round or anything. Don't waste, you know, your salary cap on guys like that.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, bigger, heavier, faster guys are better in a lot of instances, particularly in what you're talking about, goal line, short yardage, fourth down play. So I agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
You have an advocate in Steve Tasker on that subject. Which Bills depth player has impressed you the most? Let's go to the tweet sheet, brought to you, as always, by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. And Spill Fiasco leading us off today. And Spill Fiasco says, "I'm going with Morris, despite Hamlin being most noticeable. It's been clear listening to Leslie the last 2 years that both Johnson and Hamlin are guys he thinks highly of and that they each make the most of their time. He just looks better than expected. Morris took advantage of O.J. Howard." So a vote for Quentin Morris there, Steve.
Yeah.
He had some athletic receptions on Sunday.
He made
outside
one,
of his body
he
frame?
He made one catch. The ball was already by him, and he got it on a big third down. It was a huge catch. He made one out to the sidelines that turned into a big first down on a 16-yard gain. So, yeah, I think he's really good and getting better. And yeah, it's impressive that he's the guy that, you know, made O.J. Howard expendable. And there's the catch right there. Yeah. So I'm, yes, that's a good guess. That's a good pick. I like Quentin Morris a lot. I think we're going to see bigger things from him in the future.
Yeah, got a high ceiling. Steve says, currently I would say it's Hamlin due to having more opportunities thus far. In the end, I believe it will be Shakir, though. He just has so much poise and is far beyond his years as mature NFL player. Hopefully he will have the opportunity to continue to shine. Something tells me he will. Clover in Texas says, Khalil Shakir. That speed after the catch is eye-popping. So, yeah, I mean, we've said it here on the show. There's just a savviness to his route running, feel for coverage, leverage, where to go after he makes the catch too. Nothing seems to knock him off kilter. He's just a very centered, you know, down-to-earth kid that he's cool as a cucumber, man.
He's a little mentally mature like Gabe Davis was when he came in.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't seem too big for him. They seem kind of calm. They catch the football, made a couple of really good catches. Now, Shakir was killing himself because he dropped one as well. But and we noticed this, too. Last week, Gabe Davis was dropping him in Baltimore, had a couple of, like, three drops in Baltimore. Paulson went through his hands. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really uncharacteristic. And I made the point on the show that I thought it was because he wasn't feeling well physically. He was having trouble concentrating. You know what I mean? And I'll probably stand by that until I hear differently. But now that he's back on, Gabe Davis catching the ball and playing extremely well, and Shakir is that same kind of guy. Just first things first, you get open, then you catch it, and then you do what you can do. Those two guys, Davis and Shakir, seem to have that mentality. They do the basic things really well. They get open, and when the ball's thrown to them, they catch it, even the tough catches.
Break time for us here. Couple of final thoughts on the tweet sheet coming your way next in terms of which Bills depth player has impressed you the most. We're back in a second here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Some final thoughts here on the tweet sheet for Bills depth player that has impressed you the most so far this season. Jack says, excited by all these guys, but Hamlin has really looked great playing center field in the back of the D. I miss Micah Hyde, but Hamlin's play so far has really lessened the blow. The D is playing very well, and he's looked every bit the part back there. John says, Benford would have been my vote, but Shakir has made some nifty plays recently. And then TJ McLeod, hope I'm pronouncing that right. Shakir has looked smooth as silk. His hands, run after catch, and route running vaguely remind me of Stevie. Or hate to say it, but even shades of Andre. Obviously, those are big comps to compare him to, so we will see. It's always easy for people to get enamored by nifty receivers.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's... And a lot of times, Hamlin isn't even in the television camera shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard for Bills fans watching at home to see Hamlin operate unless you're at the stadium and you're watching him in coverage and the ground he's covering and all of that. The receivers they see more often because they're, you know, where the ball is.
Yeah. I'll say this, though. Shakir really did a nice job yesterday. That catch he made down the middle, the one we just saw, was a great, fantastic catch.
Triple coverage.
Josh threw it in there. Now, Josh made a heck of a throw into three different Pittsburgh receivers, and Shakir came down with it. It's a really good play. We'll see, though. They need these guys to play well because, you know, Crowder's out. McKenzie, no guarantees. He's coming back really quickly. They need to have all their guns blazing. They need to have guys who they can really count on. We'll see if Dawson Knox can get back in the lineup, although Quentin Morris played extremely well this last game. Yeah, there's a lot going on. But, Shakir, Morris, all the guys, Elam, Hamlin. It's been impressive, the depth.
Yeah, Jaquan Johnson, too. I mean, it's hard to believe the guy's a fourth-year player already. Mm-hmm. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 when we've got NFL Network's Brian Baldinger joining us. You know him from Baldy's Breakdowns. We'll see you tomorrow at 1 p.m.